Chapter 3. The guy in the overalls greeted Time with the shake of a sweaty hand that at least wasn't half as damp as his broad brow. He didn't say who he was, but the uniform had the name Arlen on it. He had her show her ID and insurance card, wrote stuff on a piece of paper attached to his little clipboard, and asked her for the keys. 10 minutes later, the car was up on two wheels behind the tow truck, and she was in the salvage vehicle's cab as the truck rolled along toward the highway. Arlen didn't seem like the talkative type by any means, and Time was still kind of listless after the weird and harrowing events of the preceding day. So for a while, the cab was filled only with the sounds of the truck's engine and rubber on pavement. Unfortunately, the source of her ride wasn't that gas station at the interstate exit, which she saw as they went by was actually out of business anyway, despite its relatively intact look. She asked the driver about it, more or less just to break the silence, and he told her that the handful of cars scattered around the lot were probably just ride-sharers or something. They'd been on the highway for about 5 minutes, eastbound at around 75 or so, which seemed pretty fast in a tow truck, when an unmarked vehicle that looked like something military to Time shot past them in the far left lane. The almost silent car was armoured in some kind of dull black-grey finish plating, and even the dark windows seemed to be more like heavy panels than thin shells of tinted glass. In fact, it kind of looked like a sleek little tank without the gun turret. But it was doing at least 85, and seemed somehow capable of more. In that moment, before the strange vehicle got so far ahead as to virtually disappear, Time studied it and thought of that crazy phone call. "Do you see a lot of vehicles like that around here?" she found herself saying.
"Eh," the driver said with a faint shrug. "Probably. I don't pay much attention."
Time was even more surprised a minute or so later to hear herself asking him if he'd ever heard of anything around there called Morning Glory. She got another shrug.
"Not really," he said. "What is it?"
I don't know, actually. Some kind of business or something, I think."
"Nope."
He sounded honest enough, and besides, the caller had said Time probably wasn't that far away from the project since she was in Nevada. But that hardly meant it was right there a few miles northeast of the old service station. And for that matter, she had no idea how a guy who didn't know what year it was, or where he'd called through time and space, could somehow know where he was sending a complete stranger to save the world. Once they got to the truck's home base, a garage that also peddled used cars, she asked if she could borrow one while hers was being worked on. She had the insurance for a rental. The manager seemed iffy about it at first, but apparently decided not to be a pain and soon agreed. Driving one of the cheaper used vehicles, Time ended up a couple of miles away at a truck stop that featured both a convenience store and a restaurant, along with the usual shower rental facilities. Having taken everything out of her car and put it in the loaner, she had fresh clothes and comfortable tennis shoes on over her freshly showered body within 15 minutes or so. And with a quick call to the garage, informing her that her car wouldn't be done for a few hours yet at best, she decided to go relax in the restaurant with a cup of coffee and maybe some kind of dessert. The place was busy, and since she was alone anyway, she opted to just sit at the counter on a swivelling stool rather than take up space at a table. Pretty good boysenberry pie and nicely strong coffee soon had her relaxed, as she'd been since the car had quit running in the middle of nowhere. The TV was on, muted and captioned, and despite her aversion to mass media news, she found herself immersed in the bizarre sight of several apparent scientists being arrested in the midst of an agitated crowd. The captions were zipping by quickly, and she wasn't even reading them at first, so by the time she started trying to pick up what was being said, she'd left her glasses in the car and was squinting. The story was all but ended. The news channel abruptly shifted to scenes of some politician yelling his point vehemently, fire in his eyes, and she wasn't about to try to read what he was saying. She went to her phone, and, using the truck stop's intermittent Wi-Fi, eventually found the story about the scientists. Apparently the scientists, a full half dozen of them, had been at the centre of a protest that had taken place the previous day at, of all places, the Janet terminal of McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas. Even Time had heard of that place, because it was the main transportation centre for employees of the infamous Area 51. The scientists had all but shut down the terminal with their crowd of several hundred mostly science-oriented peers. Not to impact the super-secret desert base so much as to draw attention in a high-profile public place. Apparently they were there on behalf of a couple of Dark Project scientists who'd come to them with dire concerns. These two whistleblowers were Doctors Ada Grant and Kenji Elster, and between the two of them, one was already dead and the other missing. Per the least corporate sources she could find on the subject, Grant and Elster had turned to their colleagues with the most public clout, a group featuring celeb scientists, along with a couple of real heavyweights, with what they'd been sworn to secrecy not to discuss with anyone. Although, they had only done so because they felt something cataclysmic would happen if they didn't. That they were both experimental physicists was... what's the opposite of reassuring? As she was reading this, a woman came up to the counter near Time and asked the waitress if she minded switching the big screen to a movie her kids loved that happened to be on at the moment. The waitress told her sure without hesitation and changed it from what was by then a report of bribery and pro sports officiating to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Somebody across the restaurant clapped. The movie had already been on for a while, so Time, peripherally noticing the flick, silently wondered why it even mattered to those kids. She liked to watch everything from the beginning, even stuff she'd seen before. She found more about Grant and Elster, and the attempted blockade at the airport. Apparently neither knew precisely where the test was going to take place, but both had come across the full-scale plans of the project, to which they'd been contributing only a very small portion. They had seen some kind of catastrophic risk, or perhaps even a certainty, some issue that they must have felt would, cause something that sounded like utter annihilation.
"For the record, I'm against global destruction," famous science guru and popular talk show host Dr. Ava Satori said, sporting a defiant little sneer, before being led into a van in handcuffs, like the other scientists in a video that Time watched in intermittently interrupted bursts on her phone while her coffee grew cold. "This is what happens when you keep dumping money into the military," she said from inside the van, looking out at whoever was recording it. "They know the truth and don't even care. Just like they said when they tested the first atomic bomb. Oh well, it might start a chain reaction that'll destroy everything on the planet, but we'll never know if we don't try." On a hunch, Time searched for morning glory as a phrase alongside a few choice words like secret, rumoured, hidden. Nothing. Following another, she went with the military penchant for A&A, acronyms and abbreviations. Perhaps morning glory had become something else. MG something. Tying those letters, again in quotes, to the others including project, site, and conspiracy. She mainly got stuff about the famous European sports car. She actually scrolled down a bit anyway because she had little else to do. Most people never even look at page 2, she'd been told a few times, mostly by people seeking to get their business or work noticed on the internet. Pages weren't quite the same on a phone feed, so for her it was more a matter of sifting past the MG midget in mint condition ads to see if anything clicked. "You want more coffee, hon?" the waitress said, shaking Time out of her research. The cup was still nearly half full, but probably not even warm anymore. And as the waitress had the pot in hand anyway, Time thanked her and had her top it off. "No problem," the waitress said, watching Time study the phone screen. "I swear," she said after a moment, finishing the top off, "my daughter gets so lost in hers that she runs into walls." Time glanced up, caught the waitress's knowing little smile and apologised. "Actually," she said, "I hardly ever get all locked into the phone like this. It's just, well, something really weird happened to me yesterday, and I guess it's driving me crazy trying to figure it out. This is the first place I've been with decent internet hookup since then."
decent. I think you're giving it way too much credit.
The waitress walked away chuckling, but wasn't gone all that long.
So, she said,
unhurriedly straightening things on the counter around her after a quick return.
Something really weird, huh?
Time looked up from her phone. The waitress looked to be in her middle 60s and had that sort of grandmother or cool great aunt vibe that made it seem like she wanted to help if she could.
Too weird to talk about in public, Time said.
Oh, you'd be surprised what kind of stories you hear in a place like this. I mean, unless it involves serial killing or something like that, you're not going to take home the all-time trophy today. I mean, it doesn't involve serial killing, right?
Time slowly shook her head.
Nothing that mundane, Time said. But I can't believe it myself, so I can't imagine why you would.
The waitress shrugged, smiling like nothing would bug her.
Try me.
Time looked around. The nearest patrons were at least 6 feet away on all sides, and there was plenty of noise. So she decided to hit the waitress with a stunner of a capsule summation.
Yesterday afternoon, I decided to take a shortcut and the car died. After which, I ended up on foot on a dirt road and coming up on an old gas station with an old phone out front that was ringing non-stop. The phone wasn't even hooked up anymore, and I thought it was some prank that somebody was recording me to put on one of those dumb shows. But I didn't see anyone. So I answered it, and lo and behold, it's none other than the famous Dr. Albert Einstein himself. He says yes, he died a long time ago, but he just figured out a way to contact the world of the living. And of course, who am I to argue?
Indeed, the waitress said, I wouldn't have. She was wearing only the faintest of grins as she asked Time what he'd said.
Weird stuff about some big experiment that's going to destroy the world, Time said.
And she glanced around again to be sure she wasn't drawing attention with such a freakish tale. Seeing no one staring back, she returned her focus to the rather inscrutable half-smile of her waitress.
He said something about morning glory, and I've been trying to look it up. That's why I look like a typical modern zombie sitting here staring at the phone. Sometimes it's unavoidable.
Not once you sign up to have that phone inserted into your head, the waitress said. Honey, like I said, I've heard an awful lot of weird tales. Yours is a good one too. But I gotta say that the fella who came through here last week claiming he'd already had it done to him via a secret experiment and that his head is now filled with non-stop news from channels he can't change is pretty strong competition. I hope the poor guy is still alive. He was kind of a mess.
So that tops a phone call from Einstein's ghost, Time said.
She smiled and so did the waitress.
Wow, that makes me feel, well, better, oddly enough. Honey, I told you we get the stories here. Not the truckers so much, although there is the all but constant craziness of Dredge Tandem to contend with every few weeks. As a matter of fact, I'm surprised old Dredge isn't here yet. He was due in last night. Hope the aliens didn't get him.
Aliens?
If it's about a conspiracy, some deep dark secret, you can bet Dredge knows more about it than you'll ever want to hear.
For a few moments, Time fell silent, sipping her coffee, which was still not all that warm, but no big deal.
Yeah, the waitress said. I get a big kick out of Dredge. Mind you, that's not his real name. But I doubt anyone here knows what it actually is, since he always pays cash for everything. He's got stories about hanging out in the right spots and seeing all kinds of crazy things, and friends that he networks with who apparently do the same thing. And speak of the amusing, if utterly weird, devil himself, just coming into the foyer out there.
Time swiveled a little and turned her head just a little more to discreetly take in the space beyond the glass doors of the restaurant entrance. With a self-given moniker like Dredge Tandem, she was expecting to see either a huge guy, probably a good stand-in for Bigfoot, or someone at the extreme other side of the size spectrum, going with a B-movie action star alias out of Insecurity. Instead, she saw a gangly man of perhaps 40, with shaggy hair and a taste for denim, who moved like a loose collective of his own body parts. He had paused to pick up a free magazine in the foyer and was standing with his back to the restaurant doors, out of the way of pedestrian traffic in a corner, and appeared to be flipping through the mag.
"I wonder if I summoned him," the waitress said dryly.
Time turned back around to see her grinning wryly.
"I gotta admit," the waitress said, "I do look forward to that freak showing up. It's always something new. Watch, I'm thinking he'll have something on those refs getting paid to make bad calls. Probably the Pentagon behind that too, I bet he'll say."
"There's my angel,"